Hey, it's Sean from the Commander's Brew. Before we get to this episode, I've got a very important announcement to make. I'm switching podcast hosts. Normally, I wouldn't have to say anything, but modern podcast hosting is pretty advanced, and the way I've been doing things is pretty old-fashioned. So it's not as simple as just updating the feed and then you don't notice anything. If you want to keep listening to this show, and I really hope you do, you'll have to click the link in the show notes. That'll take you to the new feed, and you can subscribe there. I'll keep publishing episodes on this feed until sometime the end of January. That should give people enough time to switch over to the new feed. And if you're coming back from the future and you're wondering why there hasn't been an update since sometime in January, this is why. I've got so many new episodes for you over on the new link. Anyway, here's this episode. It's Sean from the Commander's Brew. This week I'm dipping into an older commander. I'm talking about some partners. The inspiration here came from Fareed. If you really want to track the family tree of this episode, I think it's interesting. Fareed was that commander that makes scrap. Whenever a non-token artifact dies, scrap is basically useless. It has no text on it, except it's an artifact. But I just wanted to explore all the stuff that. It's a fun episode if you haven't checked it out. But then that led us to some other stuff. And one of the things I discovered, I decided to make an episode on. And that's this one. It's Kodama of the East Tree Part. We're going to do some wild stuff with this. But before I get all right to it, I do have to take care of a little bit of business. And that is to thank you for listening. I do appreciate it. I'm going to have a link in the show notes if you want to look at any of the cards I'm going to talk about in this episode. And if you would like to support the show, Patreon.com/Commander's Brew is the best way to do so. It's the most direct, and it helps out a great deal. And lastly, the Wizard Tower, wizardtower.com. I got two ads coming up, a fake one, and then a real one. Are you hungry? Don't have time to decide what to eat? Or maybe you're not sure? Use Portal Dash from Darksteel Industries. Download the app and choose whatever restaurant you like, and we'll open a portal right in your living room and bring that food straight to you, hot and fresh. We mean it. We can get something from any place, even McDonald's. We employ only true Phyrexians to bring your food to you. No need to tip them, gratuities included. And after they drop off your food, they'll just quietly leave your home and get about to all the other business we have planned for them on Earth plane. Don't worry about it. Enjoy your food. You'll never see them again until the plan is fully formed. And here's the real ad from the Wizard's Tower. WizardTower.com. Not only is that a great website to look up articles about Commander and other formats, it's a great place to buy Magic singles. And if you're watching this in Canada, you can use coupon code BREWBROTHERS to get actual money off your Magic singles. And they ship pretty quick. No portals this time. And now, back to the show. Back to the episode. This is Kodama of the East Tree, and I want to do team or partners. I'll tell you why. First of all, who's Kodama? 6-mana commander, 6/6 reach, spirit. We've got partner, so we can put anyone else we want in the command zone to change the color identity. Although this might be the single most powerful, like monocolored partner that you might be able to run by themselves. Here's what we do. Whenever another permanent enters the battlefield under your control, oh man, what a loose sentence of text. They could have put so many restrictions here, but just if another permanent enters under your control, doesn't matter how, doesn't matter what happened, well, except for this part, if it wasn't put onto the battlefield with this ability, you may put a permanent card with equal or lesser converted mana cost from your hand onto the battle. If something that costs 2 enters, you get to put a free card in that costs 2 or less. Notice they did not say anything about token versus non-token. They didn't say anything about non-lands. They didn't say you may play another card. You just put it into play. I think the most exciting thing here is getting around the restriction that we get to play one land per turn. Lands have mana value 0. So when literally any permanent comes into play, we're allowed to put a land from our hand into play. As long as that isn't the thing that Kodama put it. Kodama won't trigger itself. And I'm not even going to focus on like ways to get gigantic things to put more gigantic things. I don't think that's where the power lies. I think the power lies from just making a ton of tokens and putting free lands into play. 2, 3, 4, 5 land drops per turn. So who's the partner? I think Togo gets a special shout out as partner. You're probably going to find the most partnerships with Togo because Togo has another landfall ability. Whenever you play a land, you make a colorless equipment artifact token called Rock, and the Rock does something. You can equip it and chuck it to do a damage. 2 damage. But you see how this combos. Togo makes a Rock, and that Rock is a 0 mana value permanent, which allows us to put a 0 mana value permanent from our hand into play, like a land. That land triggers Togo again. That Rock triggers another ability to put a land in. That's fantastic. This isn't good enough because we need blue. We want to have a stocked hand full of cards, and we want to keep drawing cards so that we get to keep putting lands into play. Now, if we partner up with an Izzet commander, that's the only way to make team or with Kodama, there's only two possibilities. There's Ludovic Necroalchemist, which is a 3-mana partner. It's one of the originals. At the beginning of each player's end step, that player may draw a card if someone else besides you lost life this turn. Fine. But then there's Crown Ludovic's Opus. It's a 5-mana flying haste 4/4. And whenever an opponent casts their second spell each turn, you draw a card. Extra card draw. Really just here for the colors, but 4/4 haste, that's something. And having a bigger mana value, if we're planning on playing tons of lands per turn, is probably trivial. Also, this allows us to trigger Kodama more easily. This is a 5-drop coming down, so we'll have more options of what to just put into play from our hand. It won't only be lands. And I think the main reason we want blue is for draw, specifically draw that's tied to landfall, so that as Kodama is triggered and we put lands into play, that just draws us more cards, keeps our hand stocked full of lands, so we can just keep it going. Tetiova, Benthic Druid, the original 5-mana Simic 3/3, whenever a land enters, gain a life and draw a card. And we do have a backup, AEC Tyrant of Gyre Strait. Cost an additional mana. This is a 6-mana Serpent, 5/5. We are allowed to play additional lands on each of your turns, one additional, but most importantly, whenever a land enters, you may draw a card. No life gain, but it's all about the draw. We could think about Lotus Cobra as well. It's that 2-mana snake for it's a 2/1. Now when lands enter, we're also adding a mana of any color in our mana pool. This will help us chain together more things if perhaps we don't have a lot more lands in hand, but we have other things. We can actually cast those things. And can I shout out Sarenth Greatworm for a second? This is a brand new mythic from the Brothers War. It's selling for $1 as I record this, but I think this thing's busted. It's a 6-mana Gruul 7/6 worm, 4 red-green. Trample. Whenever a land enters the battlefield, create a tapped Power Stone token. So a land enters play, we make a tapped Power Stone token. That allows us to put another land into play with Kodama. Now that Power Stone token is tapped, so we don't get to use it for mana yet. Although we're putting out a lot of lands, this is like extra mana output. But did you catch the crazy thing here? It doesn't say whenever a land enters a battlefield under our control. Whenever anyone plays a land, we make a Power Stone. If they crack a fetch, we make a Power Stone. It doesn't have to be basic. It doesn't have to be non-basic. This thing's diverse. And each of those Power Stones lets us put another land into play from our hand. Now this is where we have the most redundancy. Creatures with landfall triggers that create tokens are plentiful. We already talked about Tago, who makes the rocks. We've got Tireless Provisioner. This is the 3-mana scout with landfall. It's a 3/2. And we get to choose, do we make a food token or a treasure token? I'm thinking treasure tokens 99% of the time, but either way, that's extra lands. Tireless Tracker makes clue tokens. If we've got a ton of extra mana sitting around at the end of turns, we can crack them to draw even more cards. Greensleeves, Marrow Sorcerer, is a 5-mana star elemental, protection from planeswalkers and wizards, interestingly enough. Power and toughness equal to the number of lands you control, so we will probably have a pretty big creature here. And this landfall trigger makes 3/3 green badger creatures. We got Phylath World Sculptor, the 6-mana 5/5 elemental. Whenever you trigger landfall, you put 4+1/+1 counters on a plant you control. And when Phylath enters, you create as many 0/1 green plant creature tokens as you have basics. Makes tokens up front. The landfall isn't a token make, but Rampaging Baloth is. 6-mana trample 6/6, landfall, make a 4/4 green beast creature token. Skewed Swarm, 3-mana insect, landfall 1/1. Whenever a land enters the battlefield, make a copy of this, as long as you have 6 or more lands, which we will most of the game. Now if we're able to play a few lands per turn, we're getting exponential numbers of Skewed Swarms. Like there just isn't enough lands in the deck. There's enough cards in the deck to play as many lands as Skewed Swarm will allow. Now I've been hinting at this, but we don't want to stop. There's a chance that we put something into play, but we don't have another land in hand to take advantage of it. So that's where all these single green sorceries that search up lands come into play. Kodama doesn't say that you have to put the permanents in tapped or untapped. That's another thing that I think they could have restricted, but they didn't. There's a whole bunch of cards. They're all single green and they all say search your library for a basic, reveal it, put it into your hand, and then shuffle your library. Some of them do a bunch of extra things. Like we got one that adds 2 energy that we will never use otherwise. That's attuned with ether. Brothers War gave us a new one called Bushwhack that is the most versatile. It has that basic search thing, but it's also a fight spell if we want to for a single green sorcerer. But you get the picture. There's like 7 or 8 of these. So we can put a forest into play with Kodama's ability. And then we can look and be like, well, you know what? I don't have anything else going on here. So before I do another one, I better put some of these lands into my hand. Now, if we're doing this all based on landfall, all of these triggers happen at once. We won't have an opportunity to cast sorceries. So you just have to be mindful of when you're going to set this up. If you're light on lands, start putting them into your hand. It's possible we're going to run out of cards and therefore run out of lands to play as we do stuff. So here's some cards that would help us out. Awake in the Woods is a mythic from Brothers War. It's already over $20, and I can imagine why, because it will be a staple in every Landfall deck from here until the end of Commander. Green, green X, sorcery. Create X 1/1 green forest dryad land creature tokens. X landfall triggers? That's incredible. They're creatures, so we can't use them right away unless we have haste, but still, all that landfall just for X, it's incredible. We've also got access to Ancient Green Warden, which is a 6 mana elemental with reach, 5/7. It lets us play lands from our graveyard, and if a land entering the battlefield causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. It doubles up landfall, and if we play a land the hard way, like from a regular land drop that isn't with Kodama's ability, that will trigger Kodama twice, but Kodama's lands won't trigger Kodama twice because those lands don't trigger Kodama, but those lands do trigger other landfall, and those ones will trigger twice. Does that make sense? It's like Panharmonicon, but only for landfall triggers. Tetiova's Steward of Tides, the other Tetiova, is pretty interesting. 3 mana, 3/3, land creatures you control have flying. What land creatures, you say? Not just Phylath, it's whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, if you control 7 or more lands, up to one of them becomes a 3/3 elemental with haste. Still a land. And it also has flying because of Tetiova. We'll be able to make a gigantic team and possibly swing in for lethal. Like I said, I'm planning on putting in multiple lands per turn. And then that's where something like Retreat to Coral Helm comes in handy. It is a 3 mana permanent. It's an enchantment for 2 and a blue. And whenever we hit landfall, we get to choose one. Tap or untap a creature, or scry one. Being able to tap a whole bunch of team down, why, that's an easy way to ensure that the entire team's going to get them. And if we can't tap an entire team from an opponent, we can probably get the major threats out of them. And then we can attack without worrying about anything. I have to talk about haste for a second, too. If we are planning on attacking with a ton of creatures, like tokens, I mean, I would hate to make 128 Skute Swarms. That would take 7 landfall triggers. I think it's possible, but it wouldn't do a lot of good if we have to wait for a full turn cycle to attack with them. It gives our opponents too much time to come up with a wrath. We have so many classics for haste. Anger, I love it. Get it in the graveyard. Now everything has haste. Cavalier of Flame is a pretty cool elemental knight. 6/5 for 5. 2 red, red, red. And all we have to do is pay 1 and a red to give creatures we control +1/+0 and haste until end of turn. 2 mana to give the entire team haste. Not to mention a 5 drop came in, so we get to put another 5 drop or less for free. Also, when this thing enters, we get to discard any number of cards and draw that many. I can imagine a world where we discard all of our non-lands and just try to stock up on lands to just keep that thing going. Fervor is an enchantment that gives all your stuff haste. 2 and a red. It's $6. Fires of Yavimaya, same thing. 1 red, green enchantment. Creatures you control have haste. This one's a buck. No, actually, it's 25 cents. Anyway, we also have the ability to sacrifice this to give one creature +2/+2 until end of turn. I can't imagine ever doing that, but I might sacrifice this just in case someone tries to exile it. We don't have to use it. It's good to have it, though. And then Temur Ascendancy is a Temur, obviously. Green, blue, red, enchantment. Creatures you control have haste. Very nice. Close the book. However, whenever a creature with power 4 or greater enters under your control, you may draw a card. We've only got one, and that's Rampaging Baloth. That makes 4/4s every time we play a landfall trigger. But we have a few things that make 3/3s and a ton of things that make 2/2s. If you want to consider the possibility of maybe one of those creatures that says other creatures enter with a +1/+1 counter so they count as bigger, maybe an anthem or two, this does become another Tetiova with landfall, right? Because the landfall makes a creature which triggers this. It's like Broken Telephone Tetiova. Okay, remember Retreat to Coral Helm, that blue enchantment that lets us tap or untap creatures with a landfall trigger? We could also load up the deck with a bunch of stuff that lets us draw by tapping so that Retreat to Coral Helm is also sort of another Tetiova. Merfolk Looter, just the classic. It's a 2-mana 1/1. Tap, draw a card, discard a card. We're not actually up a card here, so it may not be the ideal thing to do, but just to get you thinking. Archivist, classic. 2 blue, tap, draw a card. Arcanist the Omnipotent is the best of these. 6 mana, 3/4, but you can tap to draw 3 cards. And then if we untap this, we can draw 3 more cards. This is a serious draw engine. Enclave Cryptologist is a single blue merfolk wizard. It's a 0/1, but we can level him up for 1 and a blue. And once we get to level 3 or more, it becomes an actual archivist. Archivist costs 4. This costs 7 total, but we do get to pay it in increments, and again, having a ton of mana seems doable. Here's some spicy tech. What about Alaondo the Seer? Remember this card? This is from Baldur's Gate. 2 green, blue, legendary human shaman, 3/5. We have a tap ability that says draw a card. That's how I found him. But get a load of this. With Retreat to Coral Helm and a whole bunch of landfall triggers, tap, draw a card, then exile a card from your hand, and put some time counters on it equal to the mana value. It gains, when the last time counter is removed, if it's been exiled, you may cast it without paying for it. If you cast a creature spell this way, it gains haste until end of turn. Then, remove a time counter from each other card you own in exile. Think about this with Retreat to Coral Helm. We tap him, put out a 5-drop, 5 time counters. Then, we remove a time counter from each other card we own in exile. So far, that's none. But we untap him because of Retreat to Coral Helm. Now, we put something else into exile, and that first one goes down to 4. Meanwhile, that second one's ticking down. And maybe you start with a little one, so that little one hits first, which allows us to play another permanent from our hand, probably a land, which will allow Alondo to untap and keep going. Alondo could be the engine all by himself, because we're not actually discarding the cards. We're drawing and exiling, and those things will eventually come into play. I think this is a cool tech. So what are we doing though? Like, we've got a lot going on, but you know, how are we closing out this game? Well, besides swarming with a million tokens, we could do something like Kaidel, Chosen of Kruphix. This is the 4-mana Simic 2/3. We get to tap to add colorless to our mana pool for each card we've drawn this turn. And if we plan this right, we could be drawing a ton of cards, therefore making a ton of mana. And then it's just like a Blue Sun Zenith. But the beauty of being able to do this is we can cast Blue Sun Zenith on someone else's end step to draw like 15 cards. And then on our turn, we've got a fully loaded hand, so we can just go nuts with all of our landfall triggers, making tokens, doing all of our things. And Blue Sun Zenith has been shuffled back into our library, so we might draw it again, especially if we're untapping our canis to draw 3 per turn. 3 per untap, rather. And then if we've done it right, we could have Kaidel tapping for tons of mana. Then we untap Kaidel, tap for tons more mana. Now this Blue Sun Zenith is a legit finisher. If you wanted to, if your plan is to go like artifact tokens, like Togos, Farid's, things like that, Reckless Fireweaver means that whenever one of those artifacts enters the battlefield, we get to deal a damage to each opponent. With enough landfall triggers, that's lethal. Or if we're going the creature route, token creatures, Witty Roastmaster, it's the same thing. It's a 3-mana 3/2 Devil Citizen. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, creature fall, Witty Roastmaster deals 1 damage to each opponent. Now that is very easy to achieve. Thing's only a quarter. I guess it was a common. Very powerful. A lot of potential. Tunneling Geopede, similar. It's another 3-mana 3/2 in red. Anyway, this one has landfall. Do a damage to each opponent. Cool. Now think about Marog. 6-mana Minotaur Warrior, 6/6. Each creature you control gets +1/+0 for each time it is attacked this turn. And the landfall trigger is, whenever a land enters the battlefield, under your control, if it's your main phase, you get an additional combat phase, and you untap all the creatures you control. So the tappers that are drawing cards, they don't have to attack. They're just tapping to draw more cards. We're playing more lands. We're untapping everybody. We're getting more combat steps. The creatures are getting bigger as they attack. Like, you send in 5 Skewed Swarms, they all get +1/+0. Then if a few of them survive, we're going to double them up again. I mean, maybe you wait until they get 20. Like, what are they going to do? Kill 10 of them, we're going to come back with another 20 next turn with that other landfall trigger. I'm also assuming everyone has haste. That's also part of the plan. And I think one win con we got to consider is Laboratory Maniac. We might draw our whole deck. It's possible untapping our canis a bunch and all those other things. And so I've been saving a spicy bit of tech for last. This one is not for the faint of heart. Your meta has to be ready for this. They have to be open. They have to be willing to do the weirdest things magic has to offer. That's Warp World. Can be really salty. I mean, it's a bookkeeping nightmare. The stack is going to be almost impossible to sort out. But personally, I think that's kind of interesting. But I think it works for us. Here, if you're not familiar, here's what it does. It's an 8-mana sorcery. We should be able to afford it. It affects each player. So each player is going to shuffle all of the permanents they own into their library. I believe it should say this in the first sentence. It does not, but you must count them first, because then you reveal that many cards from the top of your shuffled library. So how many Skewed Swarms do I have? 30. So many tokens from making all those landfall triggers, so many lands. I'm probably going to shuffle 40 cards into my deck, but they're not cards, they're permanents. Warp World counts non-tokens. They obviously don't exist in your deck, but if I'm putting 40 tokens into shuffle, I get to reveal 40 cards. So out of everything you revealed, each player puts all the artifacts, creatures, and lands right onto the battlefield, then enchantment cards. They word it this way so that enchantments can go on top of creatures and artifacts. Like if you have an aura, it wouldn't work the other way. Now, when that happens, if a player has a deck full of instants and sorceries, they're going to reveal 30 cards at most. Like, I'm being generous, like they'll probably reveal 15 cards, and if they're full of instants and sorceries, what are they gonna get? 6 lands, maybe a permanent. We're gonna reveal like 40, and we're gonna reveal so many lands. Tetiova if she's among one of those permanents, we'll see every single one of those lands hit the battlefield. Now, Warp World itself does not say draw, it says reveal. So if we put 100 permanents in, we will not deck out because we will reveal 100 cards. We can't reveal that many. There aren't that many. But everything we reveal will come into play. But Tatiova's ability, that one is not a may. Whenever a land enters, you have to draw a card and gain one life. But this is where Lab Maniac comes in again too, because if Laboratory Maniac also hits the battlefield from the Warp World, we don't have to worry about it. We will certainly deck out and win. Not to mention, if there's anything still in our hand, we will have so many triggers to put more permanents into play. We can also dump our hand this way. Thassa's Oracle, you gotta talk about it. It's that 2-mana wizard, 1/3. When this enters, you look at the top X cards, where X is your devotion to blue. And if X is greater than or equal to the number of cards left, you win. I mean, if Skewed Swarm comes down in that Warp World, it will also see 20 lands? That's too many Skewed Swarms. Give them all haste, because we're going to get one of our haste things. Heck, maybe, do we run a... Is this another Secret Brutaclad deck? Is it deck a Secret Brutaclad deck? I don't know. I might have a problem. But all our creature tokens have haste, and at the beginning of combat, we make a 2-1 blue mirror, and then we get to make all of our tokens a copy of any other token. Like, do we just make them all Skewed Swarms and then crack a fetch and make an even more zillions of them? It's unnecessary. I think it's also interesting, just let's think about Minion Reflector. This is a 5-mana artifact. If we Warp World into this, this will hit the battlefield and it will trigger from every, because whenever a non-token creature comes into play under your control, it will see all of them. You may pay 2. If you do, put a token into play that's a copy of that creature. The token has haste, and at the end of the turn, sacrifice the permanent. All of our lands, well, all the basics anyway, are coming into play untapped. I have to pick the artifact version of this. There are enchantment versions of this, but remember, the enchantments on Warp World come out after the artifacts. So the enchantments won't see the creatures come into play, but Minion Reflector will. We get to pay 2 as many times as we have untapped lands, of which we ought to have tons. And we can just cherry pick which things we want to have copies of. They have to be non-legendary, because the legendary rule will apply. Maybe we do another Witty Roastmaster, so now any future tokens are doing double damage. Another Ancient Green Warden to play more lands from the graveyard. Does that one let us play more lands? No. Maybe just another Tireless Provisioner to make double treasures. Anyway, you get the idea. Warp World is super fun, and I love it, but please be kind to your playgroup. Not all playgroups like it. As I said, I'm just talking about our own stack. Other players make complicated stacks too, and they're all on the stack together. You resolve them in active player, non-active player order. So we're the active player, so we put our triggers on the stack first, then everyone else puts their triggers on the stack. So the opponents will resolve their triggers first. We get last dibs. It's like a big puzzle. Some people don't like that. But anyway, what a deck. This is my kind of deck. It's teamer. It's it. There's room for huge X spells. Shenanigans. And ultimately, Warp World. That's not true. I've cast Warp World before, but I've never, cast Warp World as a win con, where, it's been and now I will win. It's a fun one. I hope you thought it was fun, too. I hope you enjoyed the journey, and I hope you feel inspired to make some more cool decks and do some fun stuff. But no matter what's going on, I want you to keep being you. World's a better place for it. We'll see you next time.